Welcome to Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm Rolling Stone executive editor Nathan Brackett. Today we're going to listen to a recent interview with one of our favorite interviewees of all time, Noel Gallagher of Oasis. We're also going to talk about some new music from Angel Olsen. But first, and that was Shut Up, Kiss Me by Angel Olsen. I'm here with Susie Exposito.
Hi.
What's up, Susie?
Doing good.
All right. For people who don't know Angel Olsen, she's had a couple albums at this point, right?
Mm-hmm. Her last one was called Burn Your Fire for No Witness. And it was just so intense and sincere. And now she's so much more playful in her most recent couple of songs. I'm really excited to see what else comes up for her.
Me too. She's got like a new album coming up. It like almost reminds me of the Conor Oberst trajectory. Like those early albums are totally like a little more tortured and yearning and kind of recorded, sounded like they were recorded in a barrel. And now she's going for it in a more power pop way.
Uh-huh.
It sounds great. And the video is awesome.
Yeah, you got her skating around in the middle of the night. It's kind of spooky and kind of silly. She's tapping into her diva a little bit more.
Right.
It's been sitting kind of dormant, you know, under this really intense guise.
Right.
But now she's just being more fun and taking a risk here with her new sound. And I really like it.
And she's still just so sharp. Her like lyrics are so great always. And so I'm very interested to see where this goes too. So do you know when the new album is coming out? I would presume soon.
Yeah, September 2nd.
Cool.
It's called My Woman.
All right. Well, yeah. We'll be looking for that. Well, Susie, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
And that was Don't Look Back in Anger by Oasis, sung by a man, Noel Gallagher, who is not looking back in anger. Andy Green, you just talked to Noel Gallagher actually a couple months ago.
Yeah, it was about 2 months ago. It was right after Coachella happened and the news was coming out about Old Cella or the Desert Trip Festival.
Right.
It's yet to run in the magazine. It was just so freaking funny that we felt it was a good idea to just play it now and play parts of it.
This is the first time we're going to let an interview run for this long on the podcast. Basically, Noel Gallagher is one of the great rock interviews.
I'd say the best. When he came here about 6 months ago, we gave him a trophy on camera.
We actually gave him a trophy for this.
Physical trophy, best rock interview.
You can go to RollingStone.com and watch the video,
yeah,
right? Yeah.
I've interviewed almost every rock star in the world at this point, at least ones that are really big, and he's the best. He's the funniest. He's the most honest. He'll say anything.
He's a friend to the journalist.
Yeah. He's just a dream interview. He names names. He talks shit. He will talk about controversial topics happily. And he's always asked for the possibility of Oasis reforming, and he always just will answer it in a bit of a different way that's always funny. He's like a great jazz singer that I can always improvise on the spot. The spontaneity is great. And he's just, you know, I talked to him here. It was 40 minutes. I was laughing for most of it. He's the greatest.
This is a special treat, too, because we actually haven't run this in the magazine yet. Why don't we talk about what this column was? Because it's a little different from a lot of regular interviews
right.
that we do.
It's the final page of the magazine where we talk to very prominent and very interesting people about sort of wisdom they've learned through the years. It's not a traditional newsy interview. It's about their favorite music and lessons they've learned from this
or
that.
Yeah, it's like life lessons, which is why you're asking him kind of just broader questions about where he's from or things that are meaningful to him as opposed to
his heroes and stuff.
Right, as opposed to like the latest High Flying Birds album, which is his current band.
Yes, definitely.
Just to remind listeners, this was a couple months ago, so we're going to start with you just telling him about the latest about the Guns N' Roses AC/DC, the Axl Rose AC/DC tour, which he was quite surprised about. So without further ado, let's listen to some Noel Gallagher.
You seen this news about AC/DC that they got Axl Rose to be their new singer?
That's fucking insane, isn't it?
It's insane because he has the Guns N' Roses tour. He's going to be fronting both bands at the same time on two separate tours.
That's insane. That's as mad as fucking Adele joining the Supremes.
Yeah. So you're from Manchester. So tell me the first Manchester thing about you.
My accent.
Uh-huh.
And my sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
And my outlook on life.
Yeah.
I think would be the first thing that, you know, the first thing that Americans ever noticed was my accent, was when I first came to America. I was subtitled on MTV, which I found fucking highly amusing.
Yeah.
And I would go back to Manchester and tell my friends, I'd say, they fucking put subtitles on the telly, and they're like, what the fuck? No way.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yes. And my clothes, I suppose, set me apart as a Mancunian, and just the cosmetic things.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine you were born in a real posh family in like London or something. You'd be so different. It would have changed everything about you, probably.
Well, of course, where you're born is, and yeah, I mean that says everything. I mean, particularly in England.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether it's prevalent in the States or like huge big countries. But in England, I mean, we live in a country which is half the size of Texas and has got about 50 regional different accents that are all different. They're all completely different to each other and different cultures within different parts of the country. So from where you're born in England says everything about you. Yeah, if I was born a middle-class guy from Buckinghamshire, I don't even think I'd be in a band.
Yeah, so I'm sure you're very grateful that you had the upbringing that you did. It shaped you.
Oh, I mean, I'm so proud to be a Mancunian, even though I don't live there anymore. I'm proud to be from there, and it gave me everything. It gave me my, you know, it was a great musical education, and all the musical heroes that were from Manchester, like New Order and the Smiths and Joy Division and the Stone Roses and the Happy Mondays, they're all great. Great bands and iconic bands as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave you something to aspire to.
Yeah, all right. So tell me the best part of success and the worst part of success.
The best part of success is the money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to have a nice house for your wife to live in and your children and give your family everything that they desire is a brilliant thing. I'm not sure there is a downside to fame. I don't think I've experienced anything. I mean, there's petty little things like it is awkward being followed around the department store when you're just trying to buy underwear.
Uh-huh.
And there's people following you with camera phones and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the downside to fame, I've yet to experience one. I don't understand people that fucking bitch about it and moan about it. You know what I mean? It's kind of, and I guess as society moves forward, people must be so prepared for it now. If you're kind of a young kid and you're getting into the music business and okay, you're going to have your album's about to break big, you must be prepared for fame. You must be.
Right.
Because we're talking 50, 60 years of this shit has gone on before you, so fucking get used to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've never had a problem with it. It's not something that I've ever chased, but I received it with fucking open arms, and I was like, fucking, I'm going to kick the shit out of this. And I've enjoyed it every single day. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, are you sick of fans asking you to take selfies and stuff?
I just tell them to go fuck themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not beholden to anybody with a camera phone, and I don't give a fuck if they think I'm an arsehole either, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I turn down photographs on a daily basis, and people get quite, particularly in this day and age, when someone says, can I get a picture, and you just say no. And they go, yeah, what, really? You say, yeah, really, I'm fucking busy here buying underwear, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And some people get so offended, and then you get people who insist, and they insist, and they insist, and yeah, if I feel like doing it, I'll do it. If I don't feel like doing it, fuck them. I don't live my life to have my picture taken by fans, whether they buy records or not.
Right.
I don't ask them to buy. I'm not asking them to buy records.
All right.
You know, they buy them because they like them.
All right. So tell me the most important rules that you live by.
The most important rules is to know who you are,
mm-hmm.
be proud of who you are. A happy wife is a happy house. A happy house equals a happy life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, always remind your children. Always tell your children, and I do this regularly, I sit there and I say, you know, you're a fucking young guy, you're great and young and you're handsome, but I want you to know that you'll never, ever be as fucking cool as me. Ever. Okay? So take your fucking skateboard, okay, and all that shit, and get out into the garden with your brother and play fucking football, because you'll never be as cool as me.
And do they think they're cooler than you now, or do they accept
it? No, they agree. They go, we know, you know, yeah. We fucking know. Okay, Oasis, blah, 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 whatever, you know. Just be yourself. Never take any of the good sides of anything that you do for granted. Do you know what I mean? And stay focused on your work, because, you know, if your work is good, if your work is great, and if your work is interesting, and if your work is important, then you don't have to be. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't have to be good or nice to people, because my people dig my music, and that's where the relationship ends. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, do you worry your kids are going to lack the sort of upbringing that you had, because you can give them so many things?
Well, yeah, but of course they are. I mean, they, you know, like we said at the beginning, I'm a guy from a council estate in Manchester. Mm-hmm. My sons are not going to be guys from council estates in Manchester,
uh-huh.
and I'm not remotely interested in them experiencing that lifestyle just because I did.
Right.
You know, if I'm saying to you that one of the rules of my life is you have to know who you are, be proud of who you are, then the same applies to them.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be left to know who they are and be proud of who they are.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody. You know, there was a spate in the 90s where most people in bands pretended to be working class because it was considered cool because of Oasis.
Right. Uh-huh.
And now it's considered cool to be middle class.
Right.
You know. and really, what is cool is being both of those things. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just know who you are and fucking own it and get on with it.
And tell me your favorite book.
I'm not one for novels, but one book that I did, one novel that I have read from start to finish, and I did think was great, was On the Road by Jack Kerouac. And I know that makes me sound like an intellectual and all that, but I really am fucking not.
Mm.
I read it because I was heavily into Bob Dylan at the time, and he was going on about, I read an interview where he was going on about it. And when I got to the end of the book, I actually could see where the connection to Dylan and this book had come from. And it's an amazing story. And I wouldn't say it's my favorite book. I read a lot of autobiographies.
Uh-huh.
And like I say, I'm not really an avid reader. Do you know what I mean? I kind of read like factual things. I'm not, novels don't really interest me.
Right.
You know what I mean? But On the Road was great because... The style of the writing, you can almost hear, like, you know, it's where Muhammad Ali, not that Muhammad Ali would ever have read On the Road, I'm assuming. It's that kind of slightly rapping, kind of hipster, Bob Dylan-y, you know, Subterranean Homesick Blues, kind of the speed and the rhythm of the writing, sure. Which is really great.
Yeah, and for 1957, it was so ahead of its time.
Oh, it's fucking unbelievable. Yeah. And I didn't, it made me realize why San Francisco was so fated by everybody, because I was just thinking, why are they all obsessed with San Francisco? You know what I mean? Why New York is a fucking 10 times the city San Francisco is,
mm-hmm.
And I realized it's the jazz thing, and that's where all the jazz hipsters were in San Francisco, and they were, and it was like you know, the Mecca kind of thing where they would all the hipsters would go, and it was a great book.
Yeah,
and of course the backstory to it was all written in one go, and the dog fucking ran off with the last piece of it and all that kind of thing.
Right.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and so what book are you currently reading?
I don't I'm not reading books at the minute. I need a good one. I need to find a good one. Mm-hmm. The last book I read was about the British spy Kim Philby, who defected to the Russians during the Cold War, and it was written from the point of view of all his friends who never knew that he was like a double agent.
Oh, wow.
And it's fascinating. I think I can't remember what the fucking name of it's called. It's called it's a great book though. But I like all Second World War stuff and Cold War stuff. I find all that period of the manoeuvring of the then superpowers for world domination fascinating, and how close the world came to somebody pushing the button. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I think people in America, they don't quite understand about what England went through during the war. They can't conceive of being blitzed like that and just watching their city get destroyed by bombs that Nazis are dropping. It was insanity.
Yeah, well, I mean, America's never been invaded.
Right.
So which is why the thing when 9/11 happened, it was such a fucking thing for Americans. It's like, what on our fucking soil?
Right.
Whereas terrorist activity had been taking place and England had been invaded and the war for centuries, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was not such a big deal in over here. But, unless, you know, I mean, London had bombings in the 70s with the IRA and all that kind of thing and had been close to invasion by the Nazis and had been invaded by the Romans and the French and blah, 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 and all that. So Americans, they don't really understand what it's like. But then I think that's a good thing. You know what I mean? I'd rather live in a country that's never been invaded.
Yeah. So then tell me the music that still moves you the most right now.
It's all the classics, really. I still can hear stuff in I Am the Walrus and stuff from the 60s and Strawberry Fields that you never heard before. And it's an astonishing thing to say. You know, you can be kind of in the bathroom and Strawberry Fields can be on in another room and something will just hit you about it that it's almost like you're listening to it for the first time. And I don't just mean the Beatles or John Lennon. I mean that most of that great music from the 60s is still evolving to me. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I of course, in this day and age of playlists and the internet and all that, I have a playlist of all the great songs from the 60s, and they're kind of the songs that can stop a conversation. If you're sat in a room full of people, they're the kind of songs that can stop a conversation. And, you know, if you've not heard Love Me Till the Sun Shines by the Kinks for 4 or 5 years, you just go, fucking hell, what a fucking hell, listen to that, you know. And I find the whole period awe-inspiring. Still.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that from Love Me Do into Abbey Road was just 8 years.
Yeah, but it's not, I mean, I know everything in the 60s wrapped up in the Beatles, but it's not only that. I mean, from if you think about Love Me Do, right, most of the bands that the Beatles inspired weren't even formed then.
Right.
And then by the time you get to Woodstock, a whole fucking generation and culture has popped up and has been and is almost on its way out.
Yeah.
In, you know, under 7 years or something. It's fucking astonishing what happened. And I'm still, you know, discovering odd tracks here and there from the late 60s that you just think, wow, I mean, fucking hell, every time somebody went in the studio, they recorded a masterpiece. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and there's some bands that were around for one album or something. It was super brief, but even that stuff, it can be incredible.
The David. Have you heard the album by that band, The David?
No, no.
It's a band, I think they're from California. Mm-hmm. The David. Rumors they all got drafted into the Vietnam War, which is why they were never heard of again.
Uh-huh.
I think it's called Another Day, Another Lifetime. It's fucking insane.
Wow.
It's insane. And all the stuff from, what the fucking band called? They wrote Walk Away, Renee.
That is like the Left Bank?
The Left Bank.
Yeah.
All the stuff from the Left Bank. I mean, fucking hell.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Right, and then by the early 70s, if it wasn't for David Bowie and a few other people, like Roxy Music and a bunch of bands, I mean, the mainstream pop of then got so awful so quickly.
Yeah, well then I guess you know, you had that thing where in the early 60s, mm-hmm. you know, rhythm and blues and the blues itself had found its way across the Atlantic, and the English mm-hmm. made their own culture out of it and sold it back to America. And then yeah. when you got it to the early 70s, the English took Velvet Underground and the Stooges, and they invented punk rock, and you know, it changed the world.
Yeah.
And even those, you know, those early punk records, the Ramones and the Pistols and the Clash, are just still mind blowing. You know?
Yeah. So tell me your favorite city in the whole world.
I have three.
Okay.
And this is in no particular order, but London is where I live, and I've lived there for 23 years, and it still is one of the great places in the world. It's a great place to live, and a great place to hang out, and a great place to have fun. And I have four, actually. Sorry,
okay.
I better mention Manchester, or I will get fucking my throat cut next time I go back.
Yeah.
Manchester, because it's where my football team are from, and it's where I'm from, and it's where everything that I am was given to me by, you know, I walk the streets of Manchester, and it feels like home.
Mm-hmm.
Third place is New York City.
All right.
I think why the terrorist attacks in 2001 shook the world was because everybody who's been to New York City falls in love with it, and they feel a part of it
mm-hmm.
because every single race has been through the port of New York, and it's a multicultural, it's the original melting pot. And I guess everybody in the world has some connection with, or when they go there, has some connection with New York. You know, there's a big Irish community, there's English, there's Spanish, there's all sorts of people. The people of the world are there in New York, and it's New York is a fabulous idea that still nobody knows what it is. Where will it end up, New York? It's an amazing place, and it's a place that, you know, you look forward to when you get your tour diary and think, please, please let me not be going there in fucking November. Because my testicles will freeze off this time, I'm fucking sure. So if you're lucky enough, you get to go there in the spring or in the autumn.
Yeah.
And the fourth place is Buenos Aires in Argentina,
huh.
which I don't know if you've ever been.
No.
But it's, for me, it's the New York of South America. It's fucking unbelievable people. Unbelievable. I've had some... If every city that you go to, you take away memories from, then the four places that I've mentioned fill me with the best memory. I've had the best nights out in Buenos Aires. I've had the best shows in Buenos Aires. I've met the greatest people in Buenos Aires. I've met the greatest people in New York. Great gigs. London and Manchester the same. Manchester, I have fucking unbelievable memories of Manchester. It made me what I am. And then London, I lived on a day-to-day basis, and all my friends are there, and, you know, it's my kids are there, and yeah, they'll all be right. My four favorites.
So tell me the most indulgent purchase that you've ever made.
Oh, I had a car made once.
Uh-huh.
I had a car made. It cost me £110,000, which would be nearly $200,000. Right, I had a car made for me, like it was a 60s car this car was built in the year of my birth, 1967.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this car built to my specifications. At the time, I couldn't drive, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, well, by the time they finish this fucking car, I will easily have learnt to drive. That's not a problem. It's going to take 2 years.
Uh-huh.
So 2 years after I'd paid for this car turns up at my house. I've completely forgotten about the driving lessons, and still to this day cannot drive. And it sits in a garage.
Yeah.
It's built for a 5'8" Englishman, Irishman,
uh-huh.
Mancunian. No one else can use it.
Yeah.
It's built to my specifications. The fucking driver's seat only fits me.
Uh-huh.
And it cost me nearly $250,000. It's a beautiful car. And that was a silly thing to have done.
And that was what kind of car? What model was it?
It's a Jaguar 1967 Mark II convertible, of which there was none ever made. I converted it, and it's fucking unbelievable. It's a beautiful car, but It's black with red leather interior. If anybody would like to buy it, please put this in. I will gladly sell it to them.
Now, did you ever drive it on your driveway or anything or anywhere?
No. I can't drive.
Okay.
I can't drive.
All right. So then who are your heroes and why?
Musical heroes, I guess, would be the Beatles and the Stones because... Why? Because they got the best tunes, I think. Ray Davies, because he wrote the best songs. Pete Townsend, because he didn't give a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Gilmour, Roger Waters, because of the fire and ice like combination between the two. Roger Waters, I fucking love his megalomania.
Yeah.
Dave Gilmour, I love his kind of his coolness and his guitar playing. And then John Lydon, because he's real as fuck, and I get slightly nervous when I meet him, but I think he likes me because I've had nights out with him. And we get on great, and I love him.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the Jam, Paul Weller, who's become a friend, like a real good friend of mine, and a neighbour. And you two, who have also become friends and neighbours of mine, I love them because when I was growing up listening to the Joshua Tree, that was a really inspiring record because it was such simple songwriting, but it connected with everyone in the world, and I love that. And then the Stone Roses.
Yeah.
The Stone Roses had a song called Sally Cinnamon, which I bought the day it came out, and I took it home and I played it, and it was the one song when I played it, I thought, I know I can do it now because I can write songs like that.
Wow.
So there's them, and then there's Morrissey and Marr from the Smiths because they took songwriting to a whole nother fucking level. Morrissey is a bitch. And so funny, it's fucking unbelievable. He makes it achingly funny.
Yeah.
Johnny is just like me. And he's from Manchester, of Irish upbringing. We're kind of the same, but he's a wizard. And I'm merely a wizard's apprentice. Who else? My wife, because she's fucking gorgeous. And through some mad trick of fate, I ended up marrying her after meeting her in a nightclub, and we've got two great kids. My teenage daughter is a hero because she's come through adversity and she's fucking great and she's cool as fuck. But again, she'll never be as cool as me, which she accepts, which makes her cooler than me, which can't be possible. Who else? My mum, because she brought Liam Gallagher up. I mean, fuck me.
Yeah.
Wow. Try doing that.
You know, it's a shame about Morrissey and Marr and Gilmour's and Water. These are two of the all-time great songwriting teams. And after just a few years of working together, they both stopped and they can't stand each other. It's a real shame.
It's a funny old thing, and it seems to be that no amount of money can get them on the stage. You know what I mean? But there you go. I mean, you know, I admire them more for that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I admire them for that. And... But they're great. And then, hang on a minute, and then Neil Young, Bob Dylan.
Oh, yeah.
As for what I do now, I'm loosely termed as a singer-songwriter. They are pretty much fucking it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they're incredible. And they're still going strong in their 70s.
And, you know, every time I see Neil Young, I just think, fucking hell, does he ever do a shit gig?
No, he is one of the best live performers of right now. It's ridiculous. And his new band is so good. You should see him this summer when he's touring Europe with this new band. They're incredible.
Oh, I'll be there. Don't you worry about that. And actually, Oasis played with him a few times, and we actually got to hang out with him.
Oh, yeah.
And he came into our dressing room and knew our songs and was like, fucking, he thought we were cool. And we were like, Jesus, Neil Young. He was at Woodstock. Fuck me.
Yeah. So they're doing this super concert on the grounds of Coachella in October of Bob Dylan, the Rolling Stones, Roger Waters, The Who, Paul McCartney, and Neil Young. It'll be all six of them. Yeah, this was just announced yesterday.
What?
Yeah, it's a super, super concert. It's
when
all
is
six
it?
Of them. It's in October on the grounds of Coachella. All six of them.
Fuck, I'm going to that because my tour finishes in September.
Well, do it. It's ridiculous.
Let it be known that I'll compare that gig or I'll fucking open up on a banjo for any of them.
Yeah, because the word is that they're getting $7 million each.
Really? Is this serious?
Yeah. Oh, I swear to God.
So, what are they doing, half an hour each or something?
No, it's going to be 3 days. The first night will be Dylan and the Stones. The second night, Neil and McCartney. The third night will be Roger Waters and Who. I swear to God, this was just announced. I mean, yeah.
I'm fucking going to that. That's done. I'm going to that.
Right.
When is it? October?
It's in mid-October or an early-ish October. I don't know exactly when.
Oh, if I put the phone down now, don't be offended. I'm just going to go and get tickets now.
Okay. Yeah. So tell me the best advice that you ever got.
The best advice I was ever given was by Paul Weller, who has obviously suffered ups and downs in his career. And when I got a bit of, I wouldn't call it writer's block, but I'd fallen out of love with writing music for a brief time in the late 90s or the mid 90s. And he just told me not to chase it. Don't chase the songs. Let the songs come to you. And if they don't come to you, then it's not meant to be. And I thought that was great advice, and I've taken that advice. And every time I kind of get a bit frustrated with not writing so much, I always just put the guitar down and, you know, go and do something else.
Wow. So tell me the advice that you'd give to yourself in 1995, let's say, that the wisdom that you've learned now that you'd want to tell to yourself back then.
I would say, what would I say? 1995. I don't fucking know. I'd just say enjoy it more. I mean, I enjoyed it a lot,
uh-huh.
As you can probably imagine.
Yeah.
I'd kind of say to myself, you can enjoy it a little bit more, I think. I think you could enjoy it a little bit more. I think there's more to be gained out of it. You know, I was, I just tell myself to, I don't know, maybe I'd sing that song by Bobby McFerrin, Don't Worry, Be Happy.
So,
did that whistle.
Yeah. you know, he hasn't played that song in like 25 years and he hates it.
Good, so do I.
So tell me what you do in life just to, like, just relax.
To relax. Honestly, my life is wrapped up in touring, recording, writing, watching football, and soccer to you guys.
Uh-huh.
And my family. And to relax, I sit and play the guitar. Mm-hmm. If I can sit and play the guitar, if I can combine all of those things at the same time, that would be amazing. I think the older that I've got, I think two things. I think to go away on holiday with my wife and kids to some far-flung place in the world is an amazing thing, and just to lie on a beach and not bring a guitar and just sit and listen to the fucking waves lapping is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
Another great thing is to go away just like a weekend with my wife. It's just me and her, and we can pretend we don't have any children and do all the things that we like to do with our kids. And I think those would be the two things that now appeal to me more, is hanging out with my missus.
Uh-huh. To switch gears, I'm hearing Ray and Dave Davies are now working on some new songs together. Do you hope that the Kinks are going to reform?
It would be great to go and see them live.
Mm-hmm.
It would be amazing if they did. So, if you could hold a record with the Kinks on the front cover, a new one, that'd be amazing. I'd love to go and see them. Dave Davis is one of my unsung heroes. Love him.
Right, he's amazing. I think that one of the problems is that Dave hates Mick Avery and that Ray loves him, and they can't agree on who would play drums.
It's fucking insane. The music business is insane.
Yeah.
It's they 99% of the songs are about love.
Uh huh.
Written by people who fucking hate each other.
Right. Yeah.
It's insane.
But if there's anybody on the planet that can relate to the brother issue in a band like that, it would be you, right?
I mean,
you
understand? Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Like I say, it'd be great to go and see them, but I wouldn't, you know, I'm not going to sit here and advise them that it would be a great thing to do just to please me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Lord knows, I get it every day of the week anyway. People saying, oh, well, you know, I get people looking into my eye saying, you will reform, you'll definitely reform. And I'll be saying, what makes you so sure that, well, you just will? I'm just like, well, what the fuck? Don't be so fucking rude. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, you definitely will. You will. You will. You will.
Oh. Well, you're
trying to Jedi mind trick me here, or what?
You know, I've seen rumors in the press that they might do it without you.
Well, I do you know what? I'd fucking pay to see that.
Why?
I just would. I think it'd be fucking interesting.
Yeah.
Should we start another rumor that... We could start a rumor that I'm going to do it without Liam, and I'm going to use a hologram, like they did with Tupac at Coachella.
Right.
Start that one.
So if they try and do it, are you going to stop them, or are you going to sue or anything?
No, I wouldn't stop them at all.
No,
not in the slightest.
So that wouldn't bother you that there's a big Oasis show, but without you, it seems insane.
No, it would be fucking hilarious.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm cool with it. Listen, I'm cool. On the day that I left, they could have had the name if they'd have en masse called me up and said,
yeah,
I would have signed the name off to them, but mm-hmm. they didn't, so there you go.
Yeah, and you're doing awfully well on your own. If you're able to go out and play arenas, then why deal with all that hassle when you could just be your own boss?
Well, of course. I mean, if you're in a marriage for 20 years... and then it falls apart, and then you kind of leave, and you go and find someone else, you know, you're not going to, you know, why would you go back?
Right.
Why?
Yeah.
Actually, to be honest, you do it for the money.
Yeah.
And I like money, uh-huh. and I would do it for the money, right, if I needed the money, but I don't need the money, so.
Yeah,
I,
but
it's
like.
Not, it's not.
But like 10 years from now, when they come to you, and they offer you $50 million.
Oh, I'm in. Oh, I'm fucking in.
Okay.
Don't you worry about that.
Okay.
And there it is. He's the greatest. He's definitely top five for me. Top five or ten.
Yeah,
rock
he's up
interviews.
There with like Pete Townsend and Keith Richards and Sammy Hagar.
Sammy Hagar.
Who's great. Who's freaking great. He'll say anything. He'll bash Eddie Van Halen over and over and over again in really funny ways. He's great.
All right. Maybe that's the bonus podcast this week. So our most recent Sammy Hagar interview.
Well, yeah.
Andy Green, thanks for sharing this with us.
Of course.
And that's it for Rolling Stone Music Now. If you like what you heard, please leave a review on the iTunes Store or wherever you get your podcasts.